Hi, I'm Barry Conrad, and this is Banta with BC. Cheers.
Cheers.
Merry Kiriki
Mete. Merry Christmas. And today I'm here with my guest, Philippe Wattard. Do you want to tell the people about yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name's Philippe. I'm originally from New Zealand, born and raised in Auckland. I moved to Australia in 2003, pursuing a career in dance, which was my previous career for quite some time. Mm-hmm. That led me into pursuing acting for a while, which is where we got to bond a lot. Mm-hmm. And that eventually led me to behind camera, directing and writing, which is my ultimate passion right now.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And to kick things off, we like to start with something called Two Truths and a Lie. Do you know how this works?
I do. I've done my research. I think I got it.
You're up.
Yeah.
Hit me.
First one would be, one of my first jobs in Australia was being a swim instructor.
Okay.
I have Scottish heritage, which would be a test of you because you know me really well.
Yeah.
Third one would be the first movie I ever went to see at theaters as a kid was Care Bears.
I'm gonna say the first one's a lie. You weren't a swimmer. You weren't a swimming teacher.
I was.
What do you mean?
I was, yeah. One of the first jobs I had when I came to Australia was a swim instructor. I saw it in the paper actually, and I applied for it. Pretty bad swimmer, I'm still a bad swimmer.
That's what I was thinking, there's no way it could have been an instructor.
Yeah, but yeah, when I had the interview and told them about my dance background and being really good with kids, I grew up in a really big family, so I changed a lot of diapers growing up. So yeah, I've just always had a natural thing with kids, and that was probably the thing why they employed me. But
ladies, are you hearing this?
Yeah. I'm not trying to throw away that.
Sounds like it's a dating show application. Right? Okay, my turn. You ready? So as you know, I broke my right ankle in October. I actually broke my left ankle on my 10th birthday.
On your 10th birthday? Okay.
When I was a kid, I got stuck in a tunnel and developed claustrophobia. And I once arrived at a gig landing on a field in a chopper.
Cool. All right. I think...
Ricardo, do you want to come on the show? Come, you have to come. Come.
Yeah.
Okay, everyone, definitely. Come over here. This side. Right here.
Yeah.
So this is Ricardo, everyone. And he's just, what have you brought us here? What
so is this? It's a lamb shoulder, cooked sous vide, and then roasted. We've got some silver beetroot, roasted carrots, and a chicken jus.
Looks delicious.
It is delicious.
Can't wait to smash it. It's on the new Christmas Day menu, so get amongst it. It's going to be amazing.
Nice. I'm digging that one.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I do believe the arriving to a gig in a helicopter.
Why?
Because you gig a lot.
So that
you gig
would
a lot. I would definitely believe that. From a lot of conversations I remember, a lot of clients treat you really well at a lot of your gigs. So I could believe that actually happening. Even though I don't recall the conversation around that.
You could have been drinking whiskey sours when I told you.
I could have been, yeah. And I do also believe the claustrophobia story in the train for some reason.
You are correct. Why did you not get the ankle? Is it not believable?
I mean, I came and picked you up from this surgery. And I don't ever recollect you mentioning it happening before. So
should have thought this through.
I'm stoked that I actually got that right. Because sometimes I really doubt my listening skills.
So you're trying to say I'm a bad listener and you're a good people. It's good that we established that. Great. Let's see. So which actor would play you in a movie about your life?
Oh my gosh. Damn, which actor would play me? I'm trying to think of some New Zealand actors actually, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. That's good, huh?
So good.
I do that too. I guess like one of the New Zealand actors that I do admire, that I learned about through you, that I've connected with his work and stuff, is Manu. I think he's a great actor. I loved him on Spartacus. I loved his character on Spartacus. And I think that character in particular, about him having such a strong front, being a gladiator, but you know, his love interest in that story.
Yeah.
It's kind of exposing his softer side,
yeah.
Which I feel like I relate to, you know. I feel like I always kind of get portrayed as someone who's maybe a little bit standoffish and who can come across a bit tough at times.
So?
Because I'm not always the most like talkative person. So I think sometimes that gets kind of portrayed as a little bit egotistical or whatever, which I'm not at all, by the way. But yeah, you know, I definitely feel like underneath layers that a lot of people don't know, I'm really just a big softy and quite an emotional person.
I can attest to that.
So I think Manu would be awesome to play me at some degree.
Shout out to bro, Manu Bennett.
Good bro.
What's the biggest stereotype surrounding what you do?
Interesting.
Thought bubbles.
Yeah, definite thought bubbles right now. I think a stereotype most people have about directors is they usually, the aesthetic is usually like big, fat, and really educated.
Wow.
And I'm like the opposite of all of those.
Don't you like embody all those things?
Maybe after this meal.
That's funny.
That's an interesting question. Definite thought bubbles on this caption.
Thought bubbles.
Yeah, I haven't had this kind of question before. So I guess what has been personal to me, I guess getting into directing and coming from a background of dance, I feel I did kind of enter the space of trying to direct film where I was kind of stereotyped as being a dancer, not a filmmaker or a storyteller. And I guess that was kind of hard to deal with, right? Because then you sort of tend to shoulder yourself with this expectation to sort of prove your abilities to other people, and which can then hinder your own progress, you know, and I guess like manifest self-doubt and stuff like that, which is huge. And I guess being a filmmaker, you need that confidence. People on the other side of the camera and the rest of the crew and everything sort of rely on that confidence from you.
Yeah.
Know what you're doing. So that was probably one thing that I did encounter very early, was people who knew me as being a dancer.
Yeah.
Wanting to pursue filmmaking without sort of like relinquishing any abilities that I actually maybe had to tell stories. And you know, I was able to lean into the fact of having pursued acting for a while, so I knew how to work with actors and I knew how to get what I wanted out of them. But I didn't go to film school or anything like that, so I would focus so much attention on the actors and then very little attention on kind of anyone else.
Yeah.
You know, forgetting that I also had a cameraman sometimes and things like that. So that exposed a lot. But I think it was the transition of going from being a dancer to someone behind the camera and without, I guess being boxed into one particular art form.
I get that.
Yeah.
People having an expectation of you or trying to label you, oh, you're just a dancer, or you just belong here, you can't come here, where's the resume, or what have you done, or like what makes you a director? I get all that stuff.
So interesting.
Yeah.
How's that happen for you?
Way to turn it on me. No, it's true. Like, especially if you rewind back to X Factor days and did that show Another Lifetime, coming from reality TV into acting, it was really hard to shake the stigma of, oh, you're just a reality TV contestant, you're not really a real actor. And so to do that, to shake that, we intentionally went to theater first. Because, and into like a really stripped back, intimate show, which you saw, Violet, and there's nowhere to hide, there's no lights, there's no set. And that helped to break down maybe perceptions, but it was a slog. Like, people like to box things to make sense of it. And I think a lot of human nature can be like that, so you have to sort of prove yourself and earn your stripes in a way, but it can be frustrating because unless you spell it out for people, they don't often understand or get it. Or if the general public sees it, or if the majority sees it, then they come to the party. But making their own mind up, oftentimes they won't do it. It's like, oh, I don't understand that.
Interesting. Amazing. Do you find that perspective where people kind of tend to box you in is something that is kind of just resonates everywhere, or do you find that it's something that is a little bit unique to Australia, the Australian entertainment industry?
I definitely think, good question. I think that a lot of the mentality or energy or approach in America is collaborative. People celebrate ambition, wanting to get ahead. Let's get together, let's do this, and everything happens so quickly.
Yep.
At the speed of relationship over here, it's different in the sense of, I feel at times when I'm myself, that seems extra to people. Whereas when I'm who I am now in America, it's normal. It's like celebrated, it's great. So, and that's not a chip on my shoulder. It's like different cultures, different whatever. But yeah, I absolutely think that it is quite prominent in Australia, where if you do well, like, let's chop you down so you don't get too proud, or there's this tall poppy thing. And I think it's unnecessary, because you can ascend and progress. That doesn't mean that that's a bad thing. It doesn't mean that you're arrogant or it's a negative thing. I think, I don't know what it is, societal construct, or stay humble, just stay in the trenches.
I agree with all of that, I definitely feel like there is a bit of tall poppy syndrome kind of here in Australia, where, like you say, you know, people feel sort of the need to keep people in check.
But for no apparent reason, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like you say, it's, you know, it's different of culture and yeah. everything like that. So
I love Australia, by the way. It's a great country.
I agree. It's, right, it's my home.
Yeah, exactly. So. And like speaking about dance, you just mentioned before. So you were top four finalist in So You Think You Can Dance Australia. You danced for people like Beyoncé, Kylie Minogue, Jason Derulo, Rita Ora. The list goes on. So what about that chapter of your life or that season of your life, how has that helped shape you now, shape who you are?
Yeah, look, I think dance is a really tough industry no matter where you're doing it. I think we are fortunate south of the hemisphere to have the opportunities that we have to make it a career and a thing that we can do on a day-to-day basis and make a living from it. But yeah, I think like relative to any art form, you know, I think just being in the arts, there's a slog that you have for decades.
Yeah.
You know, which like non-artists, most can just not comprehend.
Yeah.
You know, you are slaving away for minimal money, really ultimately just to express yourself. And it's like the longest yellow brick road ever. That just doesn't ever seem to end. But you know, I believe that builds like a lot of tenacity and hardness to artists when they have the ability to push aside a lot of lifestyles that can be sort of projected onto us, you know, in terms of like going to get a safe job and having a good career. And it's like, yeah, but you know, we just want to do what we love doing, you know, we just want to express ourselves in these ways, whether it's dance or acting or storytelling or singing or anything. You know, we can't help but want to pursue and chase that thing.
It
comes with such a unique set of obstacles that I just believe, you know, if you do stick it out for you know, which we obviously have been doing two going on 3 decades now ourselves.
You know what time means. This is really good. Lamb,
not trying to shower.
It's great lamb. It's really delicious.
My pursuit of dance for 10 years before I got into it professionally and really helped shape my approach moving into filmmaking, because my pursuit of dance, like it was a struggle, you know. Financially, it was such a struggle and doing so many jobs that I hated being at, all so that I could really express myself, because dance was the only way that allowed me to really do it within my own comfort zone.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just feel that dance kind of like gave me a lot of the tenacity and the experience to then sort of, once I came across filmmaking, sort of, you know, have the ability to sit back and be okay. I learned from having that dance career now.
Yeah.
I know it's not a path that I want to duplicate the exact same way.
Yeah.
I know the journey is hard. So, you know, what can I take from that pursuit of dance that I can apply into film in terms of the way I try and pursue that career? So that's kind of opened my mind into, you know, having a side hustle and doing other things that can financially support myself, because film's super expensive as well
to
live until you're established. So yeah, but yeah, I believe that just the dance pursuit just built so much drive and tenacity in me that yeah, once my mind is kind of fixed on something, like I don't know how to give up.
So good.
Yeah.
It's awesome. And so you're working on a project right now called Delicate. Tell us about that and what inspired that.
Yeah. So Delicate is a feature film screenplay that I've written. That's been in the works for a little while now. So I guess you could say it's still in development. The story is set in New Zealand, back home in Aotearoa. It's a story about a young Māori woman who faces the shadows of her mother's suicide and her abusive stepfather, all while she's trying to chase a coveted position in New Zealand's like most prestigious dance company.
Wow.
Yeah, I originally wrote it as a drama. It kind of evolved into a psychological thriller, actually.
Okay.
Not a heavy one. There are some tones of, I guess, other films for reference, like Black Swan and Whiplash. So they're films that you know, do touch on sort of the psyche between pasta and good cheese.
They
touch on the psyche between the, you know, the sort of student teacher relationship.
Yeah. What's your weirdest habit?
Oh my god. Weirdest habits. I feel like I might need to hear yours first.
No.
To like inspire me.
No. Just what tell us.
Well, why don't you tell us what his weirdest habit?
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, weird. I don't know if they're all that weird, to be honest. I don't know if I really have discovered his weird stuff.
Really?
I mean, I know he's just like the junk food master. You know, loves his like potato chips.
Why are you gonna put me on blast like
chips?
Come on, man.
Chocolate and stuff. This guy can pack it away. So when it's like junk food night, which is, I'm assuming quite a few nights of the week,
sometimes
it's like multiple packets of chips. It's like a big bar of chocolate. So it was like maybe two Sundays ago or something, like came over.
Why are you trying to put me out? Like, come on, the people don't need to see that.
I bought some food, bought a whole bunch of chocolate. It was gone before I even like thought of looking at it.
My broken ankle needed the chocolate to recover.
So I definitely know that he can pack that away.
It's not really weird though, is it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if I know your weird stuff.
So what's your weird, you're dodging the question.
I mean, I do, ever since I was a kid, I have to sleep with a pillow between my legs.
Really?
Yeah. See, okay, so that must be weird because of the operation you just gave me.
Like, what, between your, so you're sleeping and you just have it there. Why would you do that?
I don't know, it's just a comfort thing. I don't know if that's what I used to do as a kid. Yeah, it's like feeling something between my legs. When it rests there, it just gives me comfort. I'm gonna cut this out
because it sounds like you're basically trying to say, well, I want to feel like I have something.
Yeah, no, it's just, if I just put a pillow there, then I feel like I can go to sleep. But I don't know, it's part of, even if I'm on a plane, I can't go to sleep if I'm vertical, I've got to be horizontal. But if I'm vertical and sitting up, because the plane seats are so small, if I just put a pillow between my legs and I just let it rest there, somehow it slowly will make me start to doze off.
It's pretty funny.
I don't know.
That's
maybe just a maternal thing.
That's great.
Being a kid.
There you go. Sure. You heard it here first. Yeah. There you go. That was good. He was cracking up behind the camera. Because it sounded like you're saying.
Because he's thinking dirty, that's why.
Yeah.
So I got a question for you, if that's okay.
Oh, okay.
It's not like
not
anything intense.
Okay, go ahead.
Know, just because I know you can deliver.
Oh, here we go.
Because I don't know if anyone's asked you this. Maybe.
Oh, here we go.
Series. So on your next question to me, can you maybe sing it?
Sing the question to you.
Sing the question, however you like.
Okay, this is fun. This is interesting.
I just thought of it.
Never warmed up today? I don't know. What do I sound like, Wes?
What's been your biggest rejection in life?
Damn, biggest rejection in life. Oh my gosh. I think I still go through them, to be honest. And it's probably gotten harder as I've gotten older. I think like maybe dating life.
Okay.
Yeah, I think dating life, when the whole rejection around dating life, you know, when you become emotionally invested in someone.
Yeah.
And you kind of, I guess, get rejected from that. You know, you don't take love in your pursuit of like wanting connection and everything when you're a lot younger. But now I'm mid-40s, you know, it is something that I do try to put more energy into. So I think that, I think that's probably still one of my struggles because something like that can still trigger things inside of me that I didn't even know was there that forces me to self-reflect. Like, well, I guess I've kind of had a couple of experiences over the last 2 to 3 years that I've been living back in Sydney now.
Yeah.
And I remember one dating experience did come up around attachment theory.
Oh wow, you're getting real. Here we go.
Yeah, why not, right? Must be the beetroot, I'm not sure. Yeah, and anyway, so I was getting to know this really beautiful girl and liked everything about her, started investing myself emotionally, which doesn't happen very often. And we kind of got to a point where we sort of like talked about what we wanted, ended up not being mutual.
Yeah.
I wanted to pursue things further. She didn't, which was fine. But immediately after that, like a lot of the contacts started dying.
Yeah.
You know, which was okay at the time.
Like central, like?
It was just, I guess I don't have those answers yet. But it was kind of like the radio silence then sort of triggered stuff in me, because it was, then I would sort of go into sort of self-reflect and being, am I not good enough? Like, I thought we had a thing, what is it about me? And yeah, it used to be like thoughts around this person would sort of be like the last and first thing that I would go to sleep with and wake up with.
Wow.
And naturally that gave me anxiety. And that's probably one of the only areas in my life where actually developing anxiety is around sort of acceptance by females. After probably about 2 weeks of that continuously, I sort of delved into trying to find out why I get triggered by that, because it wasn't the only time it's happened. It's happened in other previous dating experiences.
Right.
And yeah, so I came across attachment theory, and sort of when I dived into what those different theories were, that exposed kind of this, I guess, some questions around my connection with my mother, which has been a long developing relationship since 2015 and reconnecting with her. So it kind of triggered some questions there in terms of exactly what my childhood was like, in my first like 24 months. I learned some answers around that I completely wasn't ready for, but explained so much about why I get triggered when I get rejected.
Right.
And when I have moments of going through my want of giving emotion and giving love to someone not being reciprocated. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one that goes through that.
Thanks for sharing that. It was very brave. What cheers you up on a bad day?
I like my junk food as well. So being a Kiwi, potato chips, the old meat pie. I've always had a thing for sugary drinks, nothing too crazy, but just some sodas or juice or something like that, I always tend to gravitate to.
So you're basically telling people to emotionally, is that what you're trying to say?
It's not a good reference. Definitely don't recommend anyone following my path. As a kid, I grew up as a real loner, massively. I always had a busy household.
Yeah.
Always a lot of people there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was just always something that was maybe even within my own dynamic of my family as a kid, I had developed a lot of, I guess, social anxiety around. So when the lounge would get too busy, like I would go off to my room or one of the rooms that wasn't being occupied and finding some sort of way to escape from all that. Sometimes that was coloring in books with Disney.
Yeah.
That was a thing I used to love doing as a kid. Or just watching film, that's been my biggest form of escapism since I was a kid. And why I'm so stoked that I kind of gravitated back to that as an adult now. But yeah, I'm not too sure what sort of lies underneath all of that yet. Why I keep wanting to sort of distance myself from people sometimes. I think that's maybe still some of my own
when you have a bad
self-sabotaging
day.
Mechanisms. Yeah, when I have a bad day, sometimes, just want to be alone and just do those little things that give me comfort, which usually is just sitting to a movie and eating some junk food, swatting flies away,
yeah. Chasing birds away, Wes is doing. If you guys could see what I can see, like while Philippe was talking to before, Wes is walking over, shooing birds away. It's pretty funny.
What gets you through a tough day?
When I had this ankle situation, like, as you know, my number one form of self-care is the gym and working out and training. And I couldn't do that. And I didn't realize how much I relied on that to set my day up and my mind up every day. And I was told to basically elevate my leg for 23 hours a day for the first 2 weeks. So I'm sitting in my bed and I can't do anything. So mentally I had to go, what else can I do to pick myself up? And that was quite challenging. So in the best of days, I can go to the gym, feel chirpy, feel good, feel ready for the day, get after it. And the worst of days, I had to actually learn patience with myself, be kind with myself that I was slow and that things weren't getting done at my pace. So it's been a learning thing. But to answer your question specifically, exercise. It's my number one thing. Exercise, get moving, fill my ears and my eyes with things other than social media, first thing. So that could be good music, a podcast or something like that, because that sets me up and that makes me feel really good. And if I just have a fight with someone or something goes south with a deal or something like that, yeah, I'll watch a movie and have some trinkets. Trinkets, AKA chips, chocolate, you know.
Yep. You know, the spicy Cheetos.
The Flamin' Hot Cheetos is where it's at. Please sponsor me.
First one that comes to your mind. Your go-to meal, your go-to song choice, and your go-to podcast.
Is this Bento with BCS?
Yeah. I mean, we got to get to know about you too.
Off the top of my head, if I'm making it, my go-to meal would actually be like a big fat steak with sauteed potatoes and lots of butter. So I'll make that and then like have wine. I'm not going to say like a whole bottle of wine, but like a little wine. Or like some whiskey, and then I'll have some Whitaker's chocolate with Flamin' Hot Cheetos as a trinket. For that, for a podcast, I'll do 10% Happy with Dan Harris or some Jay Shetty. Literally the last song I listened to was a Craig David song with Shane Keenan. It's more like Labyrinth. I'll listen to some Labyrinth because he's chill. Emotive but not too down. Yeah, just listen to that. It's chill. Good music. Was there a specific turning point or moment that drew you to film from dance?
Yeah, it was definitely an event. So in 2013, I moved to China. I was a contract there. I did a TV commercial as a dancer, and all the film crew were a bunch of Aussies. I did connect with one of the guys there who was from Brisbane, and I had spent, I think, almost 8 years living in Brisbane when I first moved over.
Yeah.
So we had that instant rapport. Anyway, he had a production company with a few friends. It's a noisy ass bird, y'all.
Birds.
Definitely file, like, you know, jump in on my thing.
I know. The birds are trying to shoo them away. Louise is like.
That was kind of coming out of my dance career, sort of, and slash my pursuit of acting when I still wanted to pursue acting when I moved overseas, but in China as a foreigner, it's really hard to pursue acting unless you can speak fluent Mandarin in terms of the types of roles you can go for, which I didn't do either. So I naturally gravitated into writing, trying to write screenplays. So I wrote some short films, and over the period of getting to know this production crew, I jumped in and I basically just like shit kicked with them for about a year. Made coffees and went to set and just carried things around just so I could sort of stay active and I guess learn more about the entire production process. And then once I got in really good with the owner, then they were just like, you know, if you ever got anything that you want to shoot or whatever, like, let us know. And I did have one story that was, I felt, was kind of good to go, and that was the first short film that I ever made. It was pretty horrible. It was pretty terrible in terms of story. It looked awesome, but there was just no story to it. And that was my first opportunity to make something, and that was just a one night shoot. I paid for everything of it, which, my god, definitely was a big lesson in terms of how much making film costs. Once we actually got into post-production for that was my trigger point. I felt completely out of debt. I felt like I had no idea what I was doing, but for some reason everything just felt right. So that it was just basically from that experience of just trying to make a film or make a short film kind of exposed all of these things that I'd been wanting to feel with dance for quite a long time. I kind of felt with dance like I was sort of limited to how I was able to express myself after a while. I was okay at, you know, what I tried to pursue, which is around like sort of the hip-hop genre, but I just felt like the expression of physical movement limited how I wanted to tell the world who I am and things like that. But with film, you know, it tests so much your understanding of the human psyche, history, everything about color, costume, timelines, the story, you know, story structure itself. And that first project, I just felt like I was just in the deep end with floaties that were just going south really quickly. I loved it. I think it was just that element of feeling really out of my depths. It was an Instagram post that I saw the other day that just said, like, sometimes opportunity whispers, it doesn't knock. And I think it was that. You know, I think this thing of always loving film, having it as my escapism, and sort of somehow following me through all of these years, that eventually just kind of like whispered behind my ear that, eventually I listened to, and fortunately I'm now blessed to have the want to pursue that anyway.
So good.
There's still so far to go.
What's a life challenge that you're really proud of conquering?
I feel like my biggest life challenge that I'm most proud of was dealing with my childhood traumas, I think the majority of people don't ever find the courage to do that, let alone if they even discover what those are.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably impacted my life the most as a storyteller, as a person, changed dynamics in a lot of my friendships and my relationships within my family as well, ourselves included. So yeah, you know, and that can be like a really hell of a dark place to go to sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, so I get it that a lot of people sometimes don't want to deal with those traumas. Mm-hmm. But yeah, coming out the other side, I don't know what life would be like if had I, you know, some of the catalyst moments not happened in my life to sort of force me to deal with my own shit, basically.
Last question. What's your favorite Christmas song? This is our Christmas episode, so what is your favorite Christmas
song? Damn. I don't know if I know the titles of all of them, mate. I mean, I know I always listen to Michael Bublé on Christmas.
Yep.
Just something about that soothing voice, man. Just like settles you, and I feel like, yeah, okay, it's Christmas mode now.
Nice.
Mariah Carey makes me want to get up and party.
Yeah.
For a Christmas version. So yeah, I kind of prefer Bublé's. I guess any of the Christmas songs by him.
Michael Bublé, what about you, Iz? What's your favorite Christmas song or Christmas album?
I would say like, Fatih.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
And to finish things off, I'm gonna hit you with some fast trivia. You ready? Question number one. Which director always carries a flask of hot tea on set?
My God, I don't know. If
it's someone that you like. Take a guess.
That I like as a director? Hot flask or tea? God, I really don't know. Should I just take a stab in the
Take a stab.
And I Ron Howard?
Christopher Nolan.
Nolan, okay.
Which female actor and artist used to work as a backup dancer for Janet Jackson?
Wait, I know she was engaged to Channing. I remember the concert now and when they all come out and introduce themselves. Is it Jenna the one?
J-Lo.
Oh my God, sorry, as a question, married to who?
No, I said which female actor and artist used to work as a backup dancer for Janet Jackson?
Okay. See, because there's more than one, I got that. Anyway,
okay.
Thumbs great.
The three types of directing approaches are called?
Directing approaches?
Oh! There's three types.
Oh gosh. Mine, yours, and everyone else's?
Yeah. The auteur approach, the collaborative approach, and the interpretive approach. There you go.
Interesting, there you go.
Which city did the Foxtrot dance originate?
Yeah. Done Foxtrot once, happy to not know. I'm really amazing at these questions, aren't I? Really know what I'm talking about.
Take a guess.
Yeah. All my evidence is in my work. Foxtrot. Yeah. I'd be like, Tokyo, Jamaica. I don't know, somewhere in Europe.
New York.
In New York.
So you got one out of four?
Yeah, never did Foxtrot.
One out of four there? How'd you feel about that? Good?
Pretty good, actually. Yeah.
Philippe, thanks so much for coming on the Christmas episode of Banter with DC. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas to everyone watching this episode. I hope you have an amazing, safe, blessed, fun, festive Christmas and New Year's. Merry Christmas.
If you love this episode of Banter with DC, don't forget to like, comment, share, and subscribe. Thanks for watching, and we'll catch you next time.